Mr. Wonka told every single one of his workers to go home. He announced that he was closing his chocolate factory forever.
I'm closing my chocolate factory forever.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragon Reel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragon Reel podcast. This is episode number 23, where we talk about two different versions of either Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. In chair number two beside me, her snozzberries taste like snozzberries, it's Sharon.
Who's ever heard of a snozzberry? There's no such thing as a snozzberry.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
And we are the podcasters of podcasts. Oh, in chair number three, don't touch his nuts, it'll make him crazy, it's Pete.
Oh.
Well, hello, and yes, it always makes me crazy. And in chair number one...
That's me.
He's the only podcaster to be stirred by waterfall, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
It's Chris.
Wait,
I'm stirred by a great many things.
Wait,
one of them is waterfall.
What do you mean? And the nut comment was completely inappropriate. I'm just
okay. Thank
saying.
You for. Why don't you put that in the comments?
Okay, I'm gonna put that in the comments then.
Which you can find on dragonreel.com. We're gonna talk about Willy Wonka. So we watched two movies for this episode. This is the first time we've done this.
Yes.
And it was the idea of I think Sharon last week. Both of them at once?
No, actually, I said Willy Wonka, and then you said do both at once, which was crazy.
It is crazy, but you know what?
It is crazy.
They're both... So, what I want to talk about first is, do we want to recap the movie? What is the basic gist of this story?
You want us to explain the whole movie or summarize?
Just, I think, what are both movies about?
Well...
Without differentiating between the two, what are the movies about?
They're about moral choices of raising your children.
About finding... Well, the beginning was about finding the five kids who found golden tickets, which would lead them to have a wonderful experience in a chocolate factory. And then, within the chocolate factory, there were many adventures in each themed room. And then at the end, somebody was going to win a giant prize. So I finished with saying, so at the end, there's a moral lesson.
I see.
I think it's, you know, don't be a rotten kid.
I think the summation is, the morals are not don't be a rotten kid, are be a better parent.
Mm-hmm. That is
ultimately what that comes down to, because practically everything that the Oompa Loompas sing about are stuff that can be controlled by parenting.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's the first thing, and the other thing is that, you know, if you're on... the side of socialism, then you will ultimately die in a fountain of chocolate.
I gotta say, I didn't get that out of this.
Although you'll die happy, I'm not gonna lie, you will die happy.
Somebody did fall into a chocolate fountain.
No, not a chocolate fountain. A chocolate river.
A chocolate river.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he got sucked up the tube.
Mm-hmm. That would be just a scloop.
Are you eating Wonka chocolate there?
I might be.
Wow.
So you may be about to bite into a Wonka chocolate bar even as we speak.
Yum.
Watch out for the golden tickets, which are just somehow wrapped close enough to the bar that Augustus could eat one without realizing it.
I'm tasting something that isn't nougat. It's not peanut brittle.
Hmm.
I think I put my finger on it. I've had this taste in my mouth before, though.
I don't want to know about that.
it's Krispies. It's
what
Krispies.
Genre would you say this movie is? Because there was this crazy person who might have been my husband.
What I wanted to talk about immediately after summarizing the movie is this really a fantasy movie?
It's a fairy tale more than a fantasy, is my opinion.
So what?
And I mean that in the traditional sense, because fairy tales were once moral tales to get children to behave in a certain way so that they didn't end up in a bad situation.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Does it fit, like, the rest of the kind of movies that we've done? Would you categorize it as a fantasy, just given the movie itself? Either movie?
Yes.
Okay, what is fantastical about it?
Well, the Oompa Loompas are magical creatures. And there are Snozberries and Wang Doodlers and Vermicious.
Oh, yeah, not just that, but in the second movie, there's an entire palace made of chocolate.
Yes.
You know, there's also, you know, somehow he's able to transport all of an entire population into his factory without anybody noticing.
And I think...
you gotta wonder what immigration had to say about that.
Plus, look at the fact that he mixes his chocolate by waterfall.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, and stuff like that. Those are all fantastical elements.
And the gum that has the three meals. I mean, I guess you could sort of think of it as science fiction or technology, but there's a fine line between very advanced science fiction and fantasy, but the rest of
I think
of
you're kind of twisting Clark's Law there.
Well, I sort of am, but...
Well, not just that, but look at the fact that Violet turns into a blueberry at the end. It's not that she's blowing up. It's not that she's inflating. She's filling with juice.
Yes.
Right.
And that's impossible. He's creating matter from nothing.
Yes. And the Mike TV gets sent across TV waves, so that's fantasy.
Right, exactly.
And Charlie flies. I mean, do you think you could drink some, what is it called?
Fizzy lifting drink
and actually fly? I mean, boy, if that was real.
And I'm going to agree with the fact that it's fantasy. I mean, I do. I had some hesitation about doing the movie for the podcast. Because as a fantasy, it's kind of really light fantasy. And the fantasy things are more ridiculous than fantastical.
I'll disagree with you, but I see your point. But for the square, I disagree. I was actually thinking...
I would say they're still fairly fantastical. Like I was saying earlier, the geese that laid golden chocolate eggs.
Uh-huh.
As there's no such thing as golden chocolate.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, and stuff like that. I mean, I'd say that's fairly... You're getting into the high fantasy stuff there.
Okay. So there's impossible things.
Well, it's not just impossible, but also fantastical. I mean, you've got elements that clearly defy science in the first one. The second one's a little more sci-fi. The second one has a little more technical feel to it.
So, in between these two movies, 1971 to 2005, that's 34 years.
Whoa. That is amazing.
So, usually they jump on remakes quicker, you know, than 34 years.
Let's talk about whether it's a remake, because I don't think it is.
And I think you're ultimately correct in that, but I think a lot of people went in expecting a remake, and that's why it didn't do as well as it could have.
I think, and I you know what I'm going to say, but I think the second Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, there wasn't a second one, they went back to the book, completely forgot that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory from 1971 existed, and made their own movie.
Right.
I would say yes. The second one was closer to the book because I read the book. Did I like it better? No.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
So the first one was what I would call a formal musical. It is in the form of a musical.
Uh-huh.
People break out in song for no good reason and do musical things that people don't normally do.
Love that part.
Whereas Charlie,
when you win a gold ticket like that time?
Right.
Or trying to get your kid to cheer up?
Cheer up, Charlie. I love that song.
Okay, I hate it.
Oh. But I do too. You don't even like Sound of Music, so I...
Yeah, but that song is really kind of crappy.
It was so sweet.
And so the second one...
It's sung beautifully. The lyrics themselves are terrible.
And the Candyman? I mean, the Candyman became a famous...
Candyman is a classic.
...song by Sammy Davis Jr., I believe.
So, in the Candyman song, this guy is in his candy store, throwing out free candy, and Charlie is outside because he's too poor to afford free candy.
Oh,
it's not that he's too poor to afford free candy, he's too poor to realize how to open the door. It isn't until he gets money in his hand that he realizes, hey, this goes in. If I push on this door, I can enter the candy shop.
That's what it is.
You guys are just...
makes no sense that Charlie is outside looking sad when this guy is behind his counter throwing candy at the children. He never
literally throwing candy at the children.
Yes, he only, never takes any money.
But maybe he only... Well, you didn't see him take the money, but maybe he only throws chocolate to kids that are going to pay for it later. I'm just saying.
Because I could have grabbed a whole handful of stuff and been gone before he even knew I was.
But Charlie there. Wouldn't have done that because Charlie...
So the children storm in and he says, here's a candy bar for Dennis and here's a candy bar for Michael. And
so like, for Sizzler and...
Yeah, and so
our brand new Wonka Scrumdiddlyumptious bar.
Maybe they prepaid. I don't know, but Charlie Ooh, wouldn't have taken.
Maybe they got lines of credit. Maybe that's why they come by so often. They actually have lines of credit.
Yeah,
he's the candy man. Your first one's free.
Plus, by the way, did you notice how he biffs that one girl in the face?
No, I didn't. Does he really?
That
was the second time he lifts the hinged counter. There's a little blonde girl standing right in front of him. And he just gets her right in the chin and the nose. And just boom!
That's awesome.
And like a trooper, she doesn't break character. I'm like, that's got to be some of the best acting out of that entire movie. That she didn't immediately fall to the ground and go, oh, God, I'm in so much pain!
My nose!
Oh, God.
I just don't understand.
So there's
you.
There's no.
Love the music from that
incident, or there's no spontaneous song in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but the Oompa Loompas do their song and dance numbers. But I still wouldn't call this a formal musical.
But there's
also that self-reflexive moment where the kids bring up the fact how did they know that Augustus would be perfect for that song,
right?
And he tries to throw it off as, no, it's improvisation.
Mumbling!
Mumbler!
Oh.
So, the second movie that they
bump me up.
The Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie was much, much closer to the book, and even had vast stretches of dialogue that were directly taken from the book. Whereas, the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder...
I love Gene Wilder.
Here's the story. Here's a few lines. We're going to change a lot of stuff.
Well,
they changed the squirrels to geese.
They changed the squirrels to the geese that laid the golden egg. But I love Veruca Salt's song. What does she say? Gooses.
I want the world.
Yeah, I want the world. Give it to me.
Oh, okay, yeah. I do like that one.
You know, come on, that was. Yeah, I loved her. Like, she was such
Especially since she wants to date Inkable. I mean, what the hell, Veruca? Come on.
Oh.
And I think Julie Don Cole was one of the only children who went on to do more movies. Actually, Denise Nickerson did some television.
You know, she's one of those kids
she was on the Electric Company.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she was... I don't know. The other person that I hated from TV when I was little was the girl that played Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie. And I think that she and Veruca Salt are up there with... kids that, and I love all kids. Come on, I'm a kindergarten teacher. But those two, they just wanted to give them a good spin.
So they were, I guess you're saying they were good child actors because you hated them.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. That they weren't cute in any way. Like, I think most people just want to throttle them.
Oh, children, how I loathe them.
So a lot of the things that happen to the children in both movies are really horrible. And I heard, and this story makes me believe it, that Roald Dahl hated children.
Well, have you read his books?
So Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the only book that I have read.
Okay, I have read a fair amount of Roald Dahl's books, and I gotta say, he not only doesn't like children, he also is hugely moralistic.
Oh, absolutely.
So preachy.
Right. Which brings me to a point on this movie, on both of these movies. You know what they reminded me of?
What's that, pretty cool?
Not a fantasy movie.
Horror.
Not a magic movie.
He's going to say
They horror. Reminded me of slasher movies.
That's why when you asked me originally, I said horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are a lot of horror elements in... this, including
just
the fact
like a slasher movie,
like
the bad kids suffer,
one
they
at
are
a time.
Taken out, although in this story it's of their own action, as opposed to, being punished for things that everybody does.
Well, it's not just that, it's also the fact that once you enter, you're no longer in control.
Mm-hmm.
Once you enter the doors to the factory, you're no longer in control. And there's that point where in the first movie, Mr. Salt says, "What is this, Wonka? Some kind of fun house?" And he goes, "Why, having fun?"
Right. Oh.
It's probably the most sinister line in the whole movie.
What is this, Wonka? Some kind of fun house?
Why, having fun?
And he throws it away. Did you see that? Why, having fun? As if he's challenging Mr. Salt to have fun.
Mm.
You know? And it's kind of like, and then that whole sequence on the boat.
Oh, to me, that was
scary. Is it raining? Is it pouring?
So the trivia on the IMDb, and this is also reflected on Wikipedia, says that the people who were watching him during that scene
thought he
was actually coming unhinged.
Well, that's because he's a great actor.
So I saw this first. I saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory on television when I was a kid. And it scared the bejesus out of me. I hated it. I hated this movie. Did not watch it again until I was in college.
I didn't see it as a kid. So I did not have that reaction.
It terrified me, and I had like nightmares based almost entirely on the boat scene.
Oh. I got to see this as a second feature at a drive-in movie theater. Or actually, I think it was the first one, because it was a re-release, and they were doing it either 75 or 76. And then they had, I forget what he watched after that, but it might have been like the Aristocats or something like that. But it terrified me too, especially the Oompa Loompas. I used to have just nightmares.
Oh yeah, because they were terrifying little unreal people in ridiculous colors.
They're little terrifying unreal people who look like clowns. They're clowns.
Yeah, the two things that scare you guys,
So I think this might have something to do with my lifelong fear or kind of like ookiness. So I have a hang up.
We need a therapist for Chris.
I have a hang up. Okay, listeners, explain this to me.
It's clowns.
It's not clowns.
No, it's clowns.
Permanent disfigurement.
Oh, yes.
I have a thing about permanent disfigurement.
In clowns.
Because, I'm tracing it back to the first time I saw this movie. I was maybe 7 or 8. I don't know when it was on television, but I was, I was young, impressionable, and I was just so creeped out by the fact that these children did things that basically all children do and were permanently disfigured for it through no fault of their own. I mean, well, through a fault of their own, but,
Well, he did say, help, police, murder. Right. When Augustus was going into the chocolate,
you've got to save him. Help, police, murder.
And, yes, and he did tell Violet to stop chewing the gum, and then Charlie says, "Why won't she stop?" And doesn't Grandpa say because she's a nitwit? Because
she's a jerk and nobody likes her.
No, he doesn't say that.
Because Charlie, he's a nitwit. And Jackie Albertson doesn't sound like that, okay?
but
you went kind of Edward G. Robinson on that one.
Yeah, she no one likes her, she? Yeah. Yeah.
The kids,
five of us are going into this factory, she, and only one of us is coming out.
Wait, do you have any of those?
Top of the world.
Using clips from the movie might be better than us doing that.
Oh, sure. What do I got? here's like the most... Okay, I gotta say, Grandpa Joe is an asshole.
What?
First of all, they can't even afford food. They're boiling cabbage. They're using reboiled cabbage water. And somehow everyone in the family is okay with him having tobacco money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not only that, the minute he gets the golden ticket...
It's a drug. He's addicted. Stop it.
He gets up and dances around. I'm like, to go to a candy factory, you're getting up and dancing around, but you can't clean the goddamn house?
Exactly.
Well,
which is funny because Grandpa Joe does that in the second movie.
Yeah. And
he actually helps around the house.
And here's like the worst thing that Grandpa Joe does, in my opinion.
Let's take a drink, Charlie. Nobody's watching.
Yeah.
A small one won't hurt us. Whoops.
What?
Not bad.
An ass. He's like Charlie would have been fine. Charlie was actually a good kid, except now he's no better than anyone else in there, and it's Grandpa Joe's fault.
Well, you see, he's still inherently better than people in there.
Right.
See, because he's an impressionable kid following his role model's lead.
You know who else was following role models? The Nazis.
I knew that was coming. So now Grandpa Joe is Hitler.
Thank goodness you drew that conclusion. Whoa. Too deep there.
Too far. Okay, too far, Chris.
But I wanted you to play, some of the clips of, the children. Like, Veruca or Violet mm-hmm. when they're...
Rainbow drops. Suckerman, you can spit in 7 different colors.
Spitting's a dirty habit.
I know a worse one.
Yeah, Violet's dirty habit was gross, but... I mean, yeah, she's just a kid, and she really likes gum, although she chews it all the time, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I agree with what you said earlier, Pete, about the parenting, because the father is basically telling her it's okay to sort of be, you know, nasty as long as you're a salesman. I don't even know what the father
what's
was.
His point?
It wasn't just a salesman, he was a politician.
Yes, there was that too. So Sharon and I both heard this line differently from what it actually says. I'm going to play it for you. It's Veruca. And you tell me what you hear.
Give me time!
I want it now! What's the matter with those twerps down there?
What's the matter with those twerps down there?
Sharon and I heard something else.
We heard a bad word that we can't say. Okay.
Does it begin with TW also?
Yes, it also
does.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, yes, I see where you are going with this, but I can tell you no. She says twerps.
Now I hear twerps.
Oh, I heard twerps the second time I played.
Twerps. Yeah, I don't think they would have gotten away with that in 1971.
So now that we've cleared
I agree.
That
it's
up.
Just funny that, you know, there's a lot of words that sound like other words in here, like this one.
And you look like you were born to be a wonkerer.
I'll bet you were.
A wonkerer.
A wonkerer. That does not sound like a thing you want to be.
Well, because, you know, Chris, you got to think of it like children would. You know, a wonkerer would be a person who eats Wonka bars.
Yeah, that is not what I would have gone with.
Okay.
I wouldn't have gone with it either, honestly. I have to tell you.
What
my mind goes directly to.
There are also jokes that are over the heads of children in this thing, I think.
Yeah, but I think that's perfectly fine for movies. I mean, just like in Aladdin, there are jokes that are above the heads of children. That's so that mm-hmm. parents can watch the movies with the kids and have
exactly.
great... So that you can enjoy it on different levels.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
I enjoy this on different levels. Ever.
I just don't think any children understood this.
He says, what would a computer do with a lifetime supply of chocolate? I am now telling the computer exactly what he can do with a lifetime supply of chocolate.
Can I cut in here real quick? The gentleman who is being the computer programmer?
Yes.
Is a member of the Python child spin-off show The Goodies.
Is it really?
Yes, it is really.
Wow, I remember The Goodies.
Yes.
I don't remember The Goodies.
I believe that's either Tim Burke Taylor or Graham Garden.
Okay.
The children in the second version, I thought, were also as strange and weird as the kids in the first one. But I just want to say, I love how Wilder came out in the beginning of the one that I call the real movie. it's just that, you know, he comes out and he's with...
What did you call the real musical?
The one where he's walking with the cane and then, you know, he's walking slowly and then he just does that, you know, somersault and he has, you know, he greets them and he tells them to come on in. And I just have to say this, I love Johnny Depp. And I just thought that version was so creepy. And if they were going for horror,
no, it's weird,
creepy...
But that's one of the reasons why I love his version.
Oh, Mike. Okay,
she is so creepy.
So I think you and I are just going to... We'll agree to disagree. But so you liked
it. No, I'm okay with it, but here's the reason why. Because, again, to go back to what Chris brought up, this is kind of a horror film.
Well, the second one is definitely horror.
To make him that creepy is really quite wonderful. And the thing is that... He does it all with that childlike fascination through the whole thing.
I think Wilder's version is an eccentric guy who has, you know, these magical things that he has in his life.
I thought he was I thought he was like Tom Baker.
Yes, I think it's interesting.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
This movie came out 3 years before Tom Baker joined the Doctor Who cast.
Maybe Tom Baker was doing that character because, I mean, I would love to ask him. I'd love to get him in an interview and just say,
I would love to talk to Tom Baker again.
So comparing
the two, Gene Wilder played an eccentric recluse, but Johnny Depp played somebody who had never been around normal people.
Well, and he definitely acted
no
like
idea
that.
How to act around people. And I think that really comes through, and I think it comes through well.
And I think so, too. I think he really pulls it off.
Disagree.
And I also think that's one of the reasons why he is so... He's painted as such an impetuous person to close his entire factory.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be ruined, so you're all fired. Go. I don't want anybody in here. You've broken my heart kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
So you guys didn't think he was playing it like Michael Jackson?
So I have heard him compared to Michael Jackson before. I don't think...
Ugh.
I don't think he deliberately based his performance on Michael Jackson. I could be wrong.
No, not at all. I don't think so either. I think Michael Jackson had a much more predatory nature.
Well, that was my impression from the movie, and I don't know whether who our listeners would agree with, but possibly me, and they'll tell me later. it just seems so creepy in that sort of weird way of just. So, I didn't know whether he was supposed to be playing a man or a woman.
But I think if he were playing Michael Jackson, he would have actually showered attention on the kids instead of this. And I've got this because of that comparison, actually.
Don't you want to know all our names?
Can't imagine how it would matter. Come quickly. Far too much to see.
So he doesn't care about them. I think if he based it on Michael Jackson, he would just... not even go through the factory. He would spend all day sitting in the courtyard talking to the children.
I like the fact that he doesn't even call Verica by name after she introduces herself.
Yeah.
He calls her little girl through the whole movie.
I'm Verica Salt. It's very nice to meet you, sir.
I always thought a Verica was a type of wart you got on the bottom of your foot.
So that maybe there's a little Pee-wee Herman.
Pee-wee Herman?
There's a little bit of Pee-wee to him. A very, very dark Pee-wee to it.
So he's so unused to talking to people that he will say something that pops into his head and then realize maybe he shouldn't have said it and try to overcorrect.
Right.
Like this right here.
Everything in this room is eatable. Even I'm eatable. But that is called cannibalism, my dear children, and is in fact frowned upon in most societies.
I think he didn't mean to go that far.
Just that, like that line. Like, too far, X card, creepy. You know?
I also love when he sits there and says, who would want a beard? And he goes, well, beatniks for one. Which just goes to show you how out of touch with reality he is, you know? And then he slips into that whole thing of jive. You know? Very funny.
Jive?
Yeah, where he sits there and he goes, slip me some skin, so little brother.
Oh, gosh,
I didn't even, that part wasn't that
memorable. But he says it so clinically that it doesn't really come to call
right, exactly. And it's like he's repeating it rote. Like, it's not, there's nothing behind it. It's just something he heard before it locked in, and now he can regurgitate it.
Mm-hmm.
I also like the fact that, like his dad, he wears the rubber gloves all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see that, because, you know, being blind and everything. So he had rubber gloves on?
All the time.
See, if I could see that again, creepy, in my opinion. So.
The fun thing, though, is that his rubber gloves match his outfit.
Did
yes.
they? They matched
yes,
his outfit.
Yes, they do.
Oh, goodness.
It's the little things in a Burton film that I actually
do. So the funny thing is I was going to bring up the fact that having... at least absorbed a little bit of Roald Dahl through osmosis because, you know, Dave read a bunch of them and he was talking about it with us. If I were going to make a movie of a Roald Dahl book, Tim Burton is actually the first guy I'd call.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Just because, in fact, the movie Matilda felt like a Tim Burton movie, even though it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, what about... I remember you telling me earlier, Chris, that... the original held up pretty well, but you thought that when they entered the chocolate factory that it was a little bit, it looked like a little bit like a golf course? Is that what you...
So, the 1971, when they come into the, you know, the candy land, whatever it is.
The main
now,
room of the chocolate factory.
Nowadays, that looks like a mini golf course.
In the Burton version?
No, in the Willy Wonka one.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
It's a little more gothy and, you know, expressionistic in the Tim Burton-y one.
When I saw that when I was in college, I don't know if I mentioned that the first time I saw it was in college, I thought that scene was just so magical and brilliant. And him doing the song and where he's like walking down the stairs and like whips out his cane and backs up and goes down the stairs and he's singing that song. Do you have a clip of that? Because I love...
I don't.
Oh.
You mean the song where he says,
yes.
Do a thing and you'll see that it's gonna give you diabetes.
No, what?
What?
Is that diabetes?
I don't know. What?
And like he's kicking the things that are around that are edible or eatable and, you know, and they bounce and there's like, you know, the kids are going to mushrooms and putting their hands into the cream.
I did not capture that music. However, I would like to take a break and to direct your attention to the IMDb photo of Augustus Gloop from the 1971 movie.
What?
Now I have to go to IMDb.
Michael Ballner, the photo that he has for his IMDb page, he's stuffing something that looks like chocolate cake into his mouth. Mm-hmm. But he's like a 40-year-old man doing it.
That's hilarious.
You guys are.
This is the only movie he has a movie credit for. He has an acting credit.
But our viewers can't see it. So,
but you know, there's a great new device called the internet where they can go and find it themselves. And I think it's worth looking at the IMDb page for Augustus Gloop.
But if they're in the car right now.
Yes. Oh, please. Oh, pull over right now. Good point.
Yeah. I'm just.
Thank you for bringing that
sometimes
up.
Sometimes people listen to podcasts in
their
cars.
Yeah. Don't do this while you're driving. Pull over right now. We'll wait.
So, there are some really famous lines from Willy Wonka. Like when they play the music and the... whose mother is it that says, oh, that's Rachmaninoff?
That's Mike TV's mother.
Oh, you guys are good. Have you seen this movie like 3,000 times?
How many times have you seen the 1971 movie?
Probably 20.
With the two viewings that I did for this podcast, that's probably 8 times.
8 times. Okay, I've probably seen it about a dozen times myself.
Well, I've shown it to kids.
Right, so you've had this, yeah, you've terrorized children with this.
No, I have not terrorized children. They loved it, and they, you know.
The funny thing is that with the watchings of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I think I've seen that 8 times as well.
Really? Yeah. I have only seen that 3 times, and 2 of them were for this. I remember seeing it when it came out, and I remember everybody hating it, and I remember going, I kind of liked it.
I did too.
Yeah, I didn't.
And then somebody got it for me for my birthday.
Uh-huh.
So I watched it then, and then I played it a couple times for Callista, because it's colorful, and she likes the psychedelic parts and stuff. So, you know, and I'd watch it along with her there then, and then I watched it twice for the podcast, so...
Once again, you really shouldn't mumble because it's kind of starting to bum me out.
No, wait.
Of course I captured that.
Wait, which, is Mike TV the mumbler?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, right.
And that's actually in the book as well.
It is in the book.
Yeah.
I said.
That whole thing from the Prince Pundajeep or whatever.
Yeah, the Chocolate Castle is from the
It is word for word
from the book. And
one of my favorite parts of the Tim Burton movie was this line right here.
I used to work for him, you know.
You did.
I did.
He did.
He did.
I love grapes.
That was just like
Grandma Georgina is so fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, in the first one, she's like really good. But this then like it went from that into this right here.
Of course. I was a much younger man in those days.
And then they went into the flashback at his exactly the same age.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Only 20 years before.
Right.
So he's still an old man.
Yes, he was a much younger old man.
Well, if we're talking about our favorite parts, I really liked the lickable wallpaper in the first one.
Of course, because that's, you know, that's got one of the great lines.
Try some more. The strawberries taste like strawberries. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Snozzberries? Who ever heard of a snozzberry?
We are the music makers. And we are the dreamers of dreams.
And, Pete, when we were talking about this movie, you said that is an actual famous
poem. By Arthur William Edgar O'Shaughnessy. And I believe it is called Ode.
Well, so, I think you're brilliant for knowing that.
So he says a lot of things that are from poetry, song, and other things.
Yeah, he does "In Springtime, the Only Pretty Ringtime."
Oh, when he's riding the bike.
Yes, that's from a children's, you know, school song from.
Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
So this line here really bothered me.
Violet, you're turning Violet, Violet!
It's like he's trying to use his name three times, but he uses it twice in exactly the same way. You know, it's just written badly, I feel. But that is actually how it's said in the book.
Yeah, yes. That is how it's said in the book, and I think that's directing. I don't know why you don't like that.
That's not. That's how it's said in the book, and in the Tim Burton movie, he just said, "You're turning Violet, Violet," which is, I think, better. I think it works better than Violet, "You're turning Violet."
Rolls more trippingly off.
It does. It does.
To me, that's a quibbly type of thing. I just made up a new word, quibbly.
Quibbler! Quibbler!
Quibbler!
So we've kind of jumped all over a bit, so I'm going to jump back.
Okay.
And I'm going to compare the Oompa Loompa songs. Every single Oompa Loompa song in the first, in the one that's supposed to be a musical, sounds the same. It sounds like this.
Oompa Loompa Doompa-dee-doo, I've got a perfect puzzle for you.
And everything was a variation on that.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, in the book, the songs are different, and in the Tim Burton movie, they actually gave music to the songs that appear in the book.
But they gave them the Elfman treatment.
They did, and here's one of them.
Augustus Gloop, Augustus Gloop, the great big greedy nincompoop. Come Augustus Gloop, so big and vile, so greedy, foul, and infantile.
How can you prefer the old one?
I prefer the old one.
You see, I like the new one, too, and I especially like the Mike TV song better.
So I didn't capture the Mike TV song, but I did capture the Veruca song, and there's a reason for that. I'm not sure if you will agree, so tell me what this reminds you of. Anything?
Hair?
That's interesting that you say hair. It reminded me of Tommy.
Oh, okay. It kind of reminded me of hair.
Okay.
But yes. I can also see Tommy.
Same time period, but it's got that sort of 1970 vibe, which is interesting.
Yeah, like 1970 chorus thing going on.
Right, which is interesting because that's the later one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's from the later movie.
Yeah. You know, all I can think is I don't care for that one. So, I like the original. And it's not that I'm a... what would you call that? Somebody that likes the original one, because that's not
a
always.
Hipster?
I don't think I'm a hipster. I don't think so. I loved Gene Wilder in it. Mm-hmm. I loved the kids. I loved Grandpa Joe. I just loved everything about it. To me, just seemed perfect. And they're just.
Oh, the older Uncle Joe was kind of a jerk, and he led Charlie astray, and that's okay with you.
It's not real life. When I watch a movie, I know that it's not real life. And I don't know. He seemed like he was kind of, I don't know, like a oversized leprechaun to me. I mean, he just seemed like he was that kind of a grandpa. You know, it's like some grandpas are just going to get you in trouble, and you just know it. You just know
the fun ones.
Yeah, the fun ones. The ones that are going to, like, you know, they're going to smoke their pipe, but they're going to give you, like, a chocolate if you want one, or they've got a handful of peppermints in their pocket for you. And you just know that.
You just have to reach into the pocket and get it, that kind of thing? Ew!
No! That's the second one. I'm just saying that like a cool grandpa. I mean, a grandpa's there to spoil you, so that's... What I think, that's the reason that he got the candy bar, the extra candy bars from Grandpa Joe. And I can't remember now if Grandpa Joe gave him two. No, maybe one.
So Grandpa Joe gave him an extra one. So they gave him one for his birthday.
Yes.
Grandpa Joe snuck one in.
Yes.
And then he found the money and bought two bars, and it was the second bar.
Yes. Yes.
So they kind of broke the rule of three, but not really.
But he bought the bar for Grandpa Joe.
So one interesting difference. And I don't know why this was different in the 1971 movie, because in the book, Charlie's father is alive and around.
Yes.
Whereas in the 1971 movie, there's no dad.
Yes, so, as a matter of fact, they mentioned his dad having passed away.
Right. Seems a little unnecessary.
I don't think it matters whether... I don't think that's a big part of it. It to me, the point was they were poor. Mm-hmm. That's a big point in both movies, that they mm-hmm. were... They didn't have enough money even for food. So I don't think it matters if the father's around or not.
But in the 2005 movie, his father even had a job until fairly recently in the story.
But he didn't go with him to the factory.
Right.
He didn't really,
so that's another difference.
It didn't affect the plot. So that's why I'm saying it doesn't matter if he's in it or not
sure.
in it. I mean, put him in, take him out.
Right. And in the book, the children are allowed, and in fact encouraged, to bring both of their parents. And both of the parents of each child go with the child, go into the factory. So you end up with a lot of dialogue that was handed to the single parent in both movies. And both movies brought it down to a single parent.
Were both parents there?
In the book, yeah.
I think it's just easier to maintain speed and continuity if you have a smaller cast.
Well, I agree. It's an obvious better choice for a movie.
Yeah, I think it's fine that mm-hmm. one parent was there. So differences between the two of them.
Yeah,
there was no car.
Oh, and Charlie's dad was tech support from Vanilla Sky. Just had to point that out.
Oh yeah, sure enough. He was also Laura Croft's IT guy.
Ah.
But the car, you know, the car that was powered by the soda.
The bubble car.
The bubble car.
That went through the really weird.
The car wheel.
Press. I don't
that
know.
Went through the walkie watch.
Yes.
So that was a difference. We mm-hmm. already said the one about the geese and the...
Yeah, it was geese in the 71 movie and squirrels, just like the book, in
yeah,
the,
so the
2005 movie.
The squirrels were in the book.
One version is definitely musical, whereas the other one is not.
Yes.
But I also like the part, I don't know if you have a clip of it, when at the very end of the 71 version...
So you get nothing! You lose! Good day, sir!
Admiral Parts left out of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
After he says that, Grandpa is just going to take Charlie home, and Charlie comes back. Charlie wants to do the right thing, and he puts what is it, the gobstopper?
Yes, the everlasting gobstopper.
The everlasting gobstopper.
He gives it
stopper.
Back.
He gives it back, and that's because Charlie is a little sweetheart. Oh my God, he gives it back, And it always makes me cry every single time I see it. And because Charlie is just such, a good boy. And he does the right thing. You know, even though he knows that he could get money for that and feed his family, like he does the moral thing. Mr. Wonka, sir? And then, you know, Mr. Uh-huh. Wonka says, Charlie, you know, my boy, you won.
Oh,
he's like, I want the chocolate.
Because the last piece was just so obviously brutal, how could it be nothing other than a test? But that whole part, I kind of like the fact that whole part is not in the modern version, it's not in the Burton version.
Right.
I like the fact that it's the conflict of the family.
Yeah, and so the Tim Burton movie takes the story much further than the 1971 film.
Which is its one big weakness, in my humble opinion, is the fact that he had to give Willy Wonka a background.
Yes, so all of that stuff about Willy Wonka's father being a dentist who wouldn't let him eat candy, all that is tacked on for the Tim Burton movie. Which kind of explains why he's weird, but it doesn't really... I mean, I don't know if it does it well.
Right.
So are you guys saying you like that or you don't like it?
I don't especially like that part.
You did not
I don't especially like that part of the Burton film. I think I felt like the studio said, we need to pad this out.
Yeah.
And that's what they came up with. Because I don't really feel that it was a necessary addition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at some point they felt that added to the character, but I don't think it added to the film.
Maybe, but I still didn't feel it necessarily added to the character. He could just have been weird, you know?
Yeah.
Could have been
sure. I would have been fine without that.
It depends. They were giving the background for all the kids. Like, this is this kid, and this is why they're like the way they are, and they're, this is their personality, and this is. But I mean, you guys already know. I think I've made it pretty clear that I didn't like the second one. So, and I tried. I really.
Don't forget what happened to the man who suddenly got everything he always wanted.
What happened?
He lived happily ever after.
Now, how can you not? I just, you know, and that's my version. And then we're all, they'll.
That kind of feels like an ad lib to me.
No, no. It's a happy ending, and musicals have happy endings. So Pete, I take it. I just want to ask you this question directly. So you like the one with you.
I have a fondness for the Burton version of it because of how close it is to the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a fondness for the Gene Wilder version because I love Gene Wilder and he really shines in this movie.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's really kind of, it's almost the opposite of Leopold Bloom, you know?
Yeah.
He's such a contrast.
Would you, you're saying that you like them equally?
I like them for different reasons. Mm-hmm. But I'd say I like them probably equally, yeah.
I think this is probably Gene Wilder's most engaging performance.
Okay.
And he
I wouldn't say
to do
it's
that
up
flip.
There with Tim Burton with Johnny Depp's most engaging performances.
No.
The whole coming out
with the cane and doing the flip,
limping and doing the flip was his
idea.
His idea, Gene Wilder's idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he's. He doesn't consider himself a comedian, but that's, you know, basic physical comedy.
I thought he was very funny.
Well, he wanted to get across that you can't trust Wonka.
Right.
Yeah. And so the point was after to that, show that you can't trust him.
Right. Nothing. You don't know at any point whether he's leading you on or not.
And right. I also wanted to mention the part about the contracts that they signed in the beginning. That it almost seemed like there was like a bridge between the beginning part. And then the part when they were in the room when they were signing the contracts.
So you're
almost,
talking about
almost
acts.
A segue between acts?
you're just talking about different acts of the show. And in both of them, I think it was about the same amount of time to get into the factory. It was about 35 minutes.
Yes, and then also, literally, he takes them through that tiny room, and they're like, I can't breathe, I can't get out. And it's, you know...
That's the way we've come in. You sure?
Absolutely. And it's that whole, like, fun house when you're in a, you know, when you go to an amusement park and you don't know which way you're going and the crooked floors and the mirrors and the smoke and then...
And the shrinking hallway.
And then the doors open into the chocolate factory. So it's almost like you're leaving... I mean, literally, it is a door opening into a fantastical...
You think he might have a TARDIS?
Well, it's not just that. It's also the fact that the minute they close the doors to the outside world, everything starts to change.
Yeah, you know, the hands...
In the first one, the hands grabbing everything, and the second one, him just going, you know, just take your coats off and leave them anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different thing that as soon as the door closes on the outside world, you're no longer... It's like you were saying, it's like a riot at a fair. You're no longer in control.
Right.
And it's just stuff thrown at you and given to you, and you have to go, and he says in the first one, you gotta go forward if you want to go back.
Mm.
So.
He does say that. Like, press on.
So I have some interesting ratings to compare here. This is on Rotten Tomatoes. The 1971 version has an 89% fresh rating. The 2005 version has an 83% fresh rating, so they're close.
Oh.
The audience rating for the 1971 film is 86. The audience rating for the Tim Burton movie is 51.
Wow.
Very low.
So critics liked it.
I wouldn't say that's
very
low, but it's lower than.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, one of my favorite parts of the, when Sharon was talking about contracts.
Yeah.
Was when they talk about frippery. You know what that is?
Frippery? It's a penchant for listening to King Crimson albums.
No, frippery is being ostentatious in dress.
Ah, yes, that's what I meant.
So if you were wearing like, I don't know, knickerbockers and a waistcoat and a dove coat, and then you decided to add a frill, you right. know, stuff like that. That's trippery.
Yeah, I actually knew that.
So I really enjoyed the fact that that's included in the contract.
So we have heard what Rotten Tomatoes says.
And
why don't
candy
we hear?
Shops.
Why don't we hear what Sharon says? Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold
now,
pieces.
You have to tell me what I'm doing. Am I rating both of them?
I'm going to ask you the first one.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces.
Yes.
How do you rate Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I give it 5 gold pieces.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
5.
5.
Jeez.
Just saying.
All right.
And you know what? And I'm, I don't think I need to explain this because everybody that's listening to it knows why.
Okay. Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Okay, this is just me, okay?
Uh-huh.
3.5.
Oh, that's more generous than you've been so far.
I thought it was as well. I was a bit surprised.
Yeah, I
give it the 3.5 because it was true to the book, and I usually like stories that are true to the book, but I really didn't like the way that they had Johnny Depp playing Willy Wonka.
I have to say, and I know you wouldn't appreciate this as much, I think part of it is also how gorgeous Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and I think we just have to say again that this is from just listening to it, because I'm blind, for those people who don't know that. So I'm basically just hearing the voices, and I saw the 71 version when I was still sighted, and I don't know if I've ever really saw this version.
No, you wouldn't have.
Okay, so it's just, you know, people can disagree with me, it's just my interpretation, but I really want to know, Pete, what you would rate the 1971 version.
On what kind of a scale, Sharon?
1 to 5 gold pieces.
I would give it a solid 4 gold pieces. I think that it is overall well executed. I think Gene Wilder really carries the show. I think that there are some hiccups. I think that some of the sets can be fairly bland. I think they spent a lot of the money on the initial factory floor. I feel that, you know, the Oompa Loompas, that I still carry scars from them. So just as effective they were.
Yeah. And so what about the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Well, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I'm going to give 3 gold and 9 silver.
Wow.
Oh, I thought you were going to give it a 4, just like...
And I think I'm going to give it only a silver less because I felt that we didn't need the backstory for Willy Wonka, and we didn't need to see the end result of what happened to the other four contestants. I thought that was completely unnecessary let's have fun with CGI sort of way.
I actually disagree on that point, because I think seeing what happened to them is actually more interesting to me than just that one line. It's sort of a throwaway line that Gene Wilder says. I was going to say Gene Hackman. I just saw a Gene Hackman movie the other day, where he just says,
"My dear boy, I promise you they'll be quite all right."
I mean, you know, that's it. That's all you hear about. They'll be quite all right.
But they're going to leave a little wiser, is what he says.
Right, but at the same time, it's like, yes, and also disfigured, according to everything else he said.
Oh, you and your dad, they were going
to
be fine.
I told you I'd hang up.
Oh, it's just like you're really stuck
please,
on that.
Okay, so Chris, if you feel that strongly about it, how, sir, would you rate the 1971 Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I would rate Willy Wonka.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces.
I would give it 4 gold pieces and 3 silver. I think it is... It still holds up. We watched it together, and it's still a good movie. It's you can sit through it multiple times. You can rewatch it.
Your Majesty, I like that part.
There are parts in it that I don't like. I think the cutting off the chicken head in the middle of the boat scene was just stupid.
Was that a visual?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Okay. For now, since you're all troped out.
Now that everybody's cut chicken heads off.
Exactly. Now that Toby Hooper came out with Texas Chainsaw.
and I think it's just a good movie. I mean, it's old and it shows its age, but it shows age in a way that it looks like a classic.
Mm. And the second one?
There was no second one.
What?
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Oh, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I would give that 3 gold and nine silver and 5 copper.
Oh, just to make it higher than mine.
Just because I think I liked it better.
Just to make it higher than mine. So we're awfully close. So,
I think they're close, and I think it's a good film. I mean, I don't give something that close to 4 gold pieces.
Sorry. Wait, so we all
without,
said we
you know,
liked
really liking
the first
the film.
One better.
But I just think the 71 film is just a better film.
I didn't know you agreed with me.
And it's for reasons that Pete already said. Like, they've got that sort of 20 minutes of Johnny Depp dealing with having a family. I don't think it feels like you walked into another movie.
Yeah.
Do you guys know that we didn't even talk about the bad guy? I just was sitting here.
I think he's negligible, and I don't think he really matters.
He's not really the big threat.
Right. I mean, he's just barely mentioned in the book, and he turns out not to be Slugworth after all in the first movie. So I don't think Slugworth is even worth mentioning.
Hmm.
There is no bad guy. I mean, the bad guy is the children.
Well, yes, but they think there's a bad guy. And all the kids, you know, like, it is part of the plot where they were listening to him, and they were clearly, I mean, at least Violet, like, put her fingers behind her back and was going to give Slugworth her everlasting gobstopper.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of thought of that as we were closing, that we didn't say anything. Or the teacher. We didn't say anything about the teacher in school. That's like, you know, how many Wonka bars did you eat?
Well, I kind of felt that was just a bit.
Was he a comedian?
It was kind of like a sketch. I'm sure somebody. So, like, this move,
He's the guy who plays the shapeshifter in Krull.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I kind of felt like a lot of the secondary characters in the 1971 movie were like, hey, it's that guy that's in that other thing that I saw, and I never know who he is.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not really ever sure where Charlie lives in the first movie. Is that England or is that America? Because it seems to kind of not be
it's
either.
It's kind of a blend of the two.
Yeah. But in the, you know, in this 2005 movie, it really does seem like England.
I think it's the United Kingdom of America is where he
lives. See, I
also,
thought
in
it was
the
England.
2005 movie, all the children went on to do other things. Whereas in the 1971 version, I think only Veruca Salt went on to do things. Julie Dawn Cole. Big things, anyway. Of the children.
Yeah.
So that brings us to a close on our discussion of two movies this time. Two. Count them, two. More than one, not quite as many as three.
True. Very true.
And for our next film, we are going to be talking about the Vin Diesel joint, The Last Witch Hunter.
Woohoo! And then after that, Beastmaster.
And then we're going Beastmaster.
Wow.
And then Sharon gets to pick again. All right, well, that's it for the show. And until next time, you'll hear the contact information in the closing music. And until next time, have fun storming the castle. Stay sexy and don't get... Oh, no, wait, that's somebody else. And watch more movies.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.